Blog Talk Radio.
So I'm gon' drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Please don't make me slap you with the left, the left. You a fake, so I'm gon' drop you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left. Girl, I please protect me if this shit go left.
Son of a bitch. What's up, everybody? Howdy. What a great show I have for you today. When I say great, I don't mean all of the actual substance of it is great. It's jam-packed. We got some really sad news. We're all over the map today. We got a little bit of everything today. The Neil Gorsuch hearing, we're going to dive into that. We got a few stories to cover in that respect. Obviously, the situation in London that happened yesterday, we'll discuss that. We have Sheriff David Clark, the Fox News darling, is in trouble, man. He's in some hot water, and I don't know if Sean Hannity can bail him out of this one. Because there's some more fuckery going on at his jail. So there's going to be a lot about that as well. And later on, believe it or not, Sarah Palin made her way into today's show. So, I mean, you should be ecstatic, because who doesn't want to hear stories involving Sarah Palin? So everybody get ready, because, again, this is one of those days where I don't know if I could squeeze all this stuff in. So, well, we're going to give it our best shot. We're going to give it our best shot, and we're going to start right now. How about that? How do you like them apples? So, we're going to shoot on over to The Intercept and talk about what they discovered about Trump's cabinet. Spoiler, it's not good. Okay, here we go. The Intercept has a report out on the Trump administration's ties to the military-industrial complex, and it's really eye-opening. So they say here, President Donald Trump has weaponized the revolving door by appointing defense contractors and their lobbyists to key government positions as he seeks to rapidly expand the military budget and homeland security programs. Personnel from major defense companies now occupy the highest ranks of the administration, including cabinet members and political appointees charged with implementing the Trump agenda. At least 15 officials with financial ties to defense contractors have been either nominated or appointed so far, with potentially more industry names on the way, as Trump has yet to nominate a variety of roles in the government, including Navy and Army secretaries. The Trump administration is the military-industrial complex personified, said William Harding, director of the Arms and Security Project at the Center for International Policy. Harding noted that while the administration is bringing arms industry officials into government, it is also demanding a massive increase in military spending and appears to be escalating conflicts in Syria and Yemen. Quote, in short, the Trump proposals are an arms maker's dream come true. So, in other words, the rhetoric that Trump used on the campaign trail half the time was utter nonsense to try to get elected, and it actually worked. So half the time he would say, we're not going to do any nation building. We're going to, you know, we're going to rebuild our infrastructure here at home. That's what we have to do. Tremendous. Let me just tell you. And now that he has power, he decided, well, how about I act as the most establishment president ever? And I warned you about this. I said there's two possible things that Trump can do. He's either going to go rogue and that authoritarian, thin-skinned impulse he has to basically override everybody and be, you know, Big Boss Man. No offense to Big Boss Man, the wrestler. Rest in peace. Either that impulse is going to take over and he's going to be, you know, just kind of a standard authoritarian who doesn't listen to anybody. Or he ends up realizing deep down, okay, I'm in over my head. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm president of the United States now. I'm not fucking prepared for this. And what he does is he defers to the establishment, the people who've been in Washington, the people who know the ropes, the people who are used to that scene and understand the way everything works, you know, when nobody's watching in the smoke-filled back rooms. And he goes, okay, I'm going to go out and give some rallies, which is what he's been doing. You guys do the actual work. And when you defer to the establishment, what happens? The establishment has a circle jerk with other people in the establishment. The elites in the cocktail circuit love each other and talk about how great they are, and they give everybody jobs. They give only their inner circle and their friends jobs. So the military-industrial complex and, you know, the Pentagon and the government, they work closely, of course, because it's the military-industrial complex. You have the defense contractors give money to the politicians, and the politicians do the bidding of the defense contractors. It's a grotesque cycle. But what Trump is doing is he's saying, how about we just let the people who are the defense contractors, who have direct ties to these companies financially, how about we just say, okay, you come in and you take over this position in the government and that position in the government and that position over at the Pentagon and, you know, this position in my cabinet. And so what he's doing is he's basically cutting out any unnecessary steps. So it used to be, okay, we're going to be corrupt, but you got the government people who are government people, you got the industry people who are industry people, and then, you know, money and contracts go back and forth, and it's corrupt as anything, but there's that step they have to take, the distinctly different camps. He goes, no, how about it, now government people, don't even worry about them. Let's purge people from government who do government stuff, and let's just bring in the military-industrial complex and just say, okay, now you run everything. And lo and behold, look at that. Turns out Donald Trump already announced he wants a $54 billion increase in military spending. Now, maybe some of his most ardent defenders will say, well, that's necessary. We got to do that because ISIS is, you know, they're so powerful. We just did a story the other day, I think I just tweeted about it. I don't know if it made the show. They're using Kia vehicles, ISIS is, as their, like, main attack vehicle. It looked like a kid made it, and they put, like, cardboard on it and pretended it was, like, a shield or something. Comical. ISIS doesn't have an Air Force. They don't have an army. You know, there's some dudes with old-ass AK-47s and some box cutters in the desert. And $54 billion more in military spending. Because, you know, before, so weak our military was. Oh, that's right. It's the opposite. It's literally the most powerful military the world has ever seen, ever. We spend more than the next 9 biggest countries combined. 54% of our discretionary budget goes to the military. We spent $7 trillion in Iraq, trillions more in Afghanistan. We have 800 military bases around the world. It costs $100 billion a year just to maintain them. Trump looked at that and said, nope, let's do more. And again, it's not like he's saying let's do more because that's the need. The need is that. No. It's he's doing more because I just explained it to you here. The Intercept did a great job breaking it down. And by the way, go read the entire article because the entire article, and I'll leave the link in the description box, but the entire article gives the specific names. Okay, this is a person who used to work for Raytheon. This is a person who used to work for Boeing. They have direct financial ties to them, and now they're in the government. And then what's going to happen? They're going to say, okay, no bid contract to Raytheon, no bid contract to Boeing. Let's, you know, let them basically price gouge and rob the American people and loot the treasury. Take your tax dollars to put in their pocket and to build unnecessary tanks and planes. That's what's going to happen, and that's what is happening, and that's why there's a $54 billion increase in military spending. Meanwhile, at the same time, we have a D-plus for our infrastructure. That's what it's graded, according to the Society of Civil Engineers. So our roads and bridges are crumbling. But we're going to spend $54 billion more on military? That's mental. You know, half the country makes $30,000 a year or less. We have a student loan debt crisis of over $1 trillion. I mean, you think maybe we could use that for other stuff? Maybe we could use our tax money to prioritize things that help us? No, just make the military-industrial complex rich and blow up innocent brown people overseas. That's basically what's happening. Okay. Next. – Oh boy, now we got to go to the corporate Democrats. It's too early for this. It's too early for the corporate Democrats to ruin my day and my mood and get me angry this early in the show. But this one's a doozy, man. This one is a doozy. I got a lot to get through. The Daily Beast has an article out today that highlights everything that's wrong with the corporate Democrats in Washington. So let's go through it, and you'll see exactly what I mean. So the article starts, step one, raise money. Okay, pause. No. Already wrong. Strike one, you're out. No, there's no two and three. Just strike one, you're out. Like, that is already exactly the incorrect approach if you actually want to win elections. Let's continue. Step one, raise money. Democratic donors gather in D.C. to plot the resistance. Democratic donors, activists, and leaders will huddle in D.C. this week to map out their long road back to relevance. The Democratic Party's top officials will meet with some of their wealthiest donors in Washington, D.C. this week to plot the Trump resistance, according to documents obtained by the Daily Beast. The chairs of the Democratic National Committee and the party's House and Senate campaign arms will huddle with activists, operatives, and deep-pocketed Democratic financiers at a biannual conference hosted by the Democracy Alliance, leading left-wing donor collaborative at Washington's ritzy Mandarin Oriental Hotel. The alliance brings together high-dollar liberal donors, individuals, labor unions, and charitable foundations that pledge to give at least $200,000 annually to a suite of left-wing organizations. Through its partners, as the donors are known internally, the alliance in 2015 raised $75 million for its supported organizations at an annual record for the group. All right, let's pause here. So they're big money donors, millionaires and billionaires, who think they're on the left, and they raised $75 million in 2015, and it was a record. How'd that work out? Wait, you raised $75 million in 2015, and they're bragging about this. Ha-ha, it was a record. And what happened in the midst of you setting that record by raising $75 million from big money donors? You got your clocks cleaned. How soon we forget. I mean, stop and think about that. This is crazy. You raised $75 million from big money donors, and the Republicans hold the White House. They have a majority in the Senate. They have a majority in the House of Representatives. They have a majority in state legislatures, and they have a majority of governorships. The Democrats lost over 1,000 seats all over the country while Barack Obama was president. In 2015, you raised $75 million, which is incredible, and you lost across the board. Maybe there's a lesson in there somewhere. Like, I don't know, maybe raising money from big donors is not necessary, and maybe it's even counterproductive. But no, they're just doubling down and tripling down. They're like, no, that's what we're going to – don't worry. The same people who are responsible for losing to Trump, giving the White House to a reality star buffoon, now we're going to plot the resistance, and we just got to raise more money from these big money donors, then everything will be good. This is, like, unbelievable, man. All right, let's continue. Alliance-backed organizations include some of the most prominent liberal groups currently running high-level campaigns opposing – the Trump White House and Republican policies at the federal level. Those include the Center for American Progress, near a Tandon stomping ground, a liberal policy shop that has turned its 501c4 arm into an anti-Trump war room, and Media Matters for America, a media-focused rapid response group that has recently retooled its efforts towards fake news and pro-Trump disinformation. Do you guys notice anything about those two groups? They were the two so-called liberal organizations that were most in the tank for Hillary Clinton and most snubbed Bernie Sanders. So the least effective people in the so-called resistance are now saying, we got this, everybody step aside and shut up, we're going to lead the resistance, it's cool, don't worry. How about if we just raise millions of dollars more from billionaires and millionaires, and then everything will be all good, right? You have the exact wrong strategy, and you've already proven you can't beat Donald Trump. You lost to him. How about you step the fuck aside and let real liberals and progressives take over? Liberals and progressives who are funded by the grassroots and want to represent the people and who don't want to represent your shitty billionaires. This is unreal, man. Media Matters and Center for American Progress were the most pro-Hillary of all the different liberal organizations. And again, I cringe even calling them liberal. They're really just Democratic partisan hacks. Corporate establishment Democratic hacks. And what are they? Fake news. They just scream everything is fake news now, they do. And then they get mad when the Republicans turn that trick on them and say, no, you're doing fake news. Oh, no! Well, only when I say fake news is it actually fake news. And these are the people who are leading the charge with Russia, 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 Russia. Keep screaming about Russia, and I'm sure you're going to get the support of the single mother in Nebraska, you know, or the father working two jobs in Cleveland just to keep the lights on. Because when you talk about Putin, they really see that you're concerned about them. It's better to talk about Putin than to talk about, oh, I don't know, maybe making the minimum wage a living wage and tying it to inflation. It's better to talk about Putin than to talk about, I don't know, single-payer health care, Medicare for all, so we get rid of medical bankruptcies and we cover everybody in the country. Better to scream about Putin than to talk about free college or maybe doing something to fix the student loan debt crisis or maybe ending the wars, which basically jacks a giant chunk of our tax money every year. Just keep screaming about Putin. That's better than discussing actual issues that will actually help people, and I guarantee you your strategy will work. Because, you know, this guy has such a great track record previously. All right, let's continue. They say, the alliance met shortly after the election where its donors and allied organizations, still reeling from Trump's November victory, began devising strategies for the opposition. Donors in attendance will include Michael Vachon, I'm probably mispronouncing that, a top aide to billionaire hedge fund manager George Soros, healthcare technology mogul Paul Egerman, Dallas philanthropist Naomi Alberly, Susan Sandler, the daughter of subprime mortgage pioneer, Herb Sandler, and Ian Simmons, the husband of Hyatt Hotel fortune heiress Liesl Pritzker Simmons. Even their name sounds super douchey. Okay, they have the person who's the daughter of the subprime mortgage pioneer. So in other words, one of the people who's directly responsible for the giant economic crash and the subprime mortgage crisis in 2008. They're like, let them in. They're gonna lead the resistance. We're going to lead the resistance by putting front and center the person who's partly responsible for the crash. I can't, man. This is like a cartoon. It's like we're living in the Twilight Zone. They got together and said, let's get the worst of the worst and bring them in, and they'll be the resistance. How about that? This is like the DNC. Incredible. The hubris is, I've never seen anything like it before. The DNC decided, how about we staff our anti-Trump war room with all former Hillary Clinton staffers. They just lost to Trump like 17 minutes ago. You're picking the one group of people in the country that has proven they can't beat Trump, and you're like, they're going to be in charge of messaging. What? What? Only 25%, I sound like Little John. What? Only 25% of Hillary Clinton's TV ads focused on policy. And the DNC is like, great, wonderful, bring them in. They're going to do the same thing and fuck up and like give Trump another 4 years when this 4 years is up. And then they did it again. For the transition team, Tom Perez announced the transition team. It was dozens of people. You know how many Bernie supporters were on the transition team? One. It's so stupid. It's like they want to lose, but that's the thing. I don't even think they really care about winning. They just care about business as usual. They're all getting rich by being Democratic strategists and having these positions and whatnot. So they'd rather lose while continuing business as usual and keeping their jobs, then have Democrats, liberals and progressives, and Democrats who actually are liberal and progressive win, because that would mean then they lose their jobs, because we would fire them because they've already proven they suck at their job. I mean, think about it. This is one of the only industries, along with fucking Wall Street CEO, by the way, where you can just be an abysmal failure and you get promoted and you get bonuses. They fucking failed miserably. Everybody involved in Hillary Clinton's campaign should have been fucking out of Washington. Go get a different job. You suck at this. You couldn't beat Donald Trump. But now they're getting higher positions. Oh, my God. He did, and they hired him for the transition team, too. It's unbelievable. Okay. So, let's continue. They say the alliance's donors have recently had to step up their financial commitments as the group retools its mission from policymaking by way of an allied White House to opposition to Republican dominance at all levels of government. In addition to their annual contribution thresholds, alliance partners must chip in to support the donor collaborative's operations. Here's my favorite part. Partner dues increased by between $5,000 and $10,000 this year to support the alliance's revamped mission. Okay, so do you understand what they just said there? They are literally doubling down and tripling down on big money in politics. That's literally what they're doing. They said, oh, we lost. You know what the answer is? We need more money from our big money donors. I can't. It is honestly like a parody. Like you had genius comedy writers sit down and make up the chart to losing, the path to losing in 2020. Okay, what are we going to do? I don't know. Totally snub the liberal and progressive grassroots who actually care about the issues. Totally snub them. Get the same out-of-touch establishment elitist corporatists in Washington to maintain their positions. Bring in George Soros, guys, and just ask them to double or triple your contribution to our shitty fucking billionaire donor network. And then somehow magically we win. By the way, in this article, nothing about policy. Unbelievable. Guys, we actually have the solution. JusticeDemocrats.com. And by the way, I absolutely love how, and when I say love, I mean despise with every fiber of my being. You have more coverage of stuff like this, where they have no people behind them. They have no actual human beings behind them. It's a bunch of fucking billionaires and a bunch of Washington insiders who get together and say, aren't we great? Yeah, we're great. Give me more money. Yes, let's be more corrupt. They get more coverage than Justice Democrats does, than Our Revolution does, than We Will Replace You does, than the various third-party organizations working to reform the left, make the people in Washington actually more progressive so that we can actually win. They get these corrupt elitists get way more coverage and definitely more positive coverage. They go, oh, the resistance is plotting. And how do they talk about actual grassroots people? If they talk about us at all, and oftentimes they don't, they go, ragtag little groups. Just nonsense, stupid. Anyway, back to the elitists. Aren't they great? It's really just a sick joke. Hey, guess what? A Democracy Alliance. Justice Democrats are going to primary your beloved corporate Democrats, and we're going to win. And we have the people on our side. Like, again, this is what they don't get. This is what they don't see. It's going to be like a fucking freight train that blindsides them. Is that while your ass was at a ritzy hotel in Washington with George Soros' right-hand man raising more money, we were raising it $27 at a time, Bernie Sanders style. We were getting it from accountants and construction workers and dentists and regular people who just want a better country. And we were out there talking about the issues because we want to fight for progressive policy positions, and we attracted an actual audience. We attracted people who actually agree with what we're saying. And it's the overwhelming majority of the American people who, according to the polls, agree with progressive priorities. But our numbers keep growing, man. We already raised over $1 million in such a short amount of time, and we're doing it because we're telling people, hey, if you're a Justice Democrat, you can't take corporate money, you can't take PAC money, you can't take billionaire money. You can't do it. You can't take it. Then you are not a Justice Democrat if you do that. So first of all, you have to pledge, I'm not going to be corrupt. I'm only going to raise money from the people because I want to fight for the people, and then we're going to fight to get money out of politics. But then furthermore, these are people who, hey, we're for Medicare for all. A majority of the American people want it. The studies show it's the best healthcare system. Our healthcare system is a disaster, even though it got a little bit better with Obamacare. Medicare for all, single payer, we're going to fight for it. We're going to fight to make the minimum wage a living wage and tie it to inflation. We're going to end the stupid drug war, which is ruining people's lives over nothing because they get caught with a little bit of weed. all the things that actually matter, that actually affect people's lives, and the wars where trillions of dollars has been wasted overseas, $7 trillion in Iraq, trillions more in Afghanistan, military-industrial complex run amok, the Wall Street bailouts. We give Wall Street the big banks, $80 billion a year in subsidies while our infrastructure is crumbling. That's crazy. So we're out here arguing for fixing the system and for making us a thriving social democracy while your asses are on the cocktail circuit talking to billionaires, trying to schmooze them to get more money, and then you think, magically, if I just raise the money from the billionaires, then I'll win. But you already did that. Hillary couldn't outraise Donald Trump. She outraised Donald Trump. She had Wall Street more on her side, and she lost. So that's not the answer anymore. It's not 1987 anymore. You got to actually come with a message, a populist left message that the American people agree with. That's what we're going to fight for, and we're going to win. Guys, we already have 80 candidates who made it through four rounds of vetting. 30 candidates right now are in training. This is really happening. We have actual populist left people, justice Democrats, who are going to fight the corporate Democrats and tell them, step the fuck aside. We treat you just like we treat the Republicans. You are our enemy. And then don't come talking, unity, we need democratic unity. We need democratic unity among people who actually believe in a liberal and progressive message. The corporate Democrats do not believe in that. They believe in a corporate message. They believe in serving their donors above all else. And they'll yell every now and then, they'll sprinkle some, hey, look, I'm in favor of gay marriage. Isn't that enough for you to support me and go out and vote for me and love me, even though I also at the same time voted in favor of Wall Street? It's not enough. It's not enough anymore. So what we do is we get people who care about all the progressive policy positions. And when we talk about unity, oh, we're in favor of unity, but we're in favor of unity against with actual liberals and progressives. We're in favor, you know, I'm more than willing to unify with people who are from the Green Party or from the Democratic Socialists or from our revolution. We already teamed up. You want to talk about unity? We are literally unifying because Justice Democrats teamed up with Brand New Congress, another progressive grassroots group that's fighting for similar things that we're fighting for. There's your unity. So don't tell us, oh, they can't unify, they can't unify. No, you can't unify because you don't want to unify behind an actual progressive message. The only thing you want to unify behind is let's all take corporate money and then let's all sell out. So justicedemocrats.com, read our platform, see what we're about. Go sign your name in support of the movement because the more powerful we get, the more scared they get. And don't you want to make these people scared? So justicedemocrats.com, donate if you can, small dollar amount. That's all we do. We're funded by you. You know, you are the ones who power this movement. This movement isn't me. This movement is about you and the ideas, the platform. And it's a movement of the people, by the people, and for the people, and we have to win. We have hundreds of thousands of people who are already supporting it. Let's get the number of supporters to over 1 million, because I'll tell you what do they have, Democracy Alliance? Dozens of people? They have dozens of people, but they have all the big money. Well, we are pledging to do it without big money, so that means we just need more people. We need more people, and we need more small-dollar donations, and that's how we win. And I can't wait for the primaries because we're going to make an impact on them, and we're going to show them you can't be actual liberals and progressives. The corporate Democrats are a house of cards, and they can no longer run the Democratic Party because then the Democratic Party will keep losing, which means you're handing the country over to the Republicans, which means, yes, you blame the corporate Democrats and the Republicans for the destruction of the country. We're here to save it. And if you don't agree with that, well, we'll see you at the primary now, won't we? Okay. Let's take a break. When we come back, Nancy Pelosi. We got that, and we'll, of course, get to the situation in London. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Thank you. we're back, y'all. I got a thing for that. For that, like, I don't, I think that's like 70s disco. I got a thing for that. It's always so funky. All right, Nancy Pelosi, who indeed is not funky. She ain't funky. Let's see what she has to say about the Democrats. Nancy Pelosi, who, Nancy Pelosi was asked who the leader of the Democratic Party is, and she gave a pretty bad answer.
Who is the leader of the Democratic Party right now?
Well, President Obama was the president of the United States until just a matter of a weeks ago. I don't think that he can be dismissed as the leader of the Democratic Party. Hillary Clinton did not win the election, but a respected leader. But we have leaders for all different aspects of it. The Democratic Party is a congressional party, and we have leaders in Congress. It is a gubernatorial party, and leaders.
But on the state level, it is a party which has suffered tremendous losses in the last couple of years.
It has, but we have a plan to address that.
So there's not one standard bearer that you see as the leader of the Democratic
Party. Well, we're not in the presidential time.
By the way, she did not go on to lay out what that plan is to address that. Anderson Cooper's like, according to the numbers, you guys have been fucking obliterated at every level of government. Yeah, we have a plan for that. Really, what's your plan? Please, give me some of the deets on the plan, bro. Let's see what you got for us. Nothing. They don't have a plan. Guys, look, doing what we're doing with Justice Democrats, you actually can see the players and see, okay, who actually is organized and what are they doing and how are they organizing. They don't have a plan. Again, the corporate Democrats are a house of cards. They're just propped up by big donor money. We just covered the story about Democracy Alliance, the Center for American Progress, all these Media Matters, these uber pro-Hillary corporate Democrat groups. They're doing fundraisers with George Soros because they just want the money. And then they go, we get the money, and then maybe later we get the support. But you're not going to get the support later. Meanwhile, Justice Democrats, hundreds of thousands of supporters, over 8,000 people who wanted to run as a Justice Democrat. So we actually have the people on our side, and we are organizing. We have a plan. Everybody knows our plan. Go read about what we're doing on JusticeDemocrats.com. There, she's like, we have a plan or something or whatever. It is what it is. Anyway, who's the leader of us? Hillary. Okay, look. Even bringing up Obama, like Obama, I get a little bit more. He was just the president, and he went out with a 60% approval rating, which is pretty high. So, yeah, I get kind of bringing up Obama, but at the same time, I don't because, like, okay, he's out. He's gone. He's done. It's over. He ain't politics anymore. He was president. Now he's fucking skiing with some billionaire douchebag. I saw the pictures the other day. Not skiing, jet skiing with some billionaire douchebag. So then I don't think you can bring up Obama. But then, so if not Obama, who's the one that she defaults to? Hillary. So the person who just lost the reality show buffoon who said, I grab him by the pussy, I don't even wait. The one who took, you know, over $600,000 from Goldman Sachs for a few speeches. The one who cuddled up to Wall Street and her claim against them was, I went to them right before the crash and said, you guys stop it. I mean, that's embarrassing. Like, that's really weird. I'm so tough on Wall Street, I went to wag my finger at them and told them to stop it as they gave me money and I passed policies that helped them. Supported NAFTA, pushed for intervention, orchestrated intervention in Libya, voted for the Iraq War. I mean, that's it. Yeah, you're done. You can't. If you're a Democrat and you voted for the Iraq War, you ain't our leader. You're not our leader. She voted for the Patriot Act. She voted for the fucking Patriot Act. You can't rip the Constitution up and throw it in a fire and then go, well, I'm the leader of the Democrats. I don't believe in Fourth Amendment rights. I don't believe in protection from unreasonable search and seizure. I believe in no due process, no habeas corpus, but I'm the Democrats' leader. You're not our fucking leader. You're not our leader. So you just lost. Okay, I'm going to give myself a fucking aneurysm here on air. But this is how broken the corporate Democrats are. Who your leader? I'd bet Obama, even though he's not in government, and Hillary. Meanwhile, Bernie Sanders, story after story, poll after poll comes out and says he's the most popular politician in America, literally. So before, about a year ago, it was he's the most popular senator in America. And what they did is they went to all the different states and they asked the constituents of those senators respectively, okay, how do you like your senator? He had over 80% of the people in Vermont go, yeah, I love him. So he was the most popular senator. But then now they polled the entire country, and they didn't do it state by state. They didn't ask their own constituents. They just asked everybody in the country. Fox News did. Bernie Sanders, 61% favorability rating, the most popular politician in America by far. Trump is at like 44%. Pence was at like 47%. Hillary was at 35%. She's at 35%. Bernie's at 61%. Hillary. Bernie's not a Democrat, though. It doesn't count. Well, there's your problem right there. Your problem right there is you care more about the club. Who's in the club? Who's in the corporate Democrat club and will take billions of dollars and raise money from billionaires and run a shitty campaign? If you're in our club, then you count. So Joe Manchin, he's a good Democrat. Joe Manchin, who voted for Jeff Sessions for Attorney General, sided with Trump a tremendous percentage of the time for his picks. They'd rather say Joe Manchin than Bernie Sanders, which says everything about how serious you are as a political thinker. I don't care that he currently doesn't have the D by his name. He stands for the values that we're supposed to stand for. He stands for single-payer health care. He stands for raising the minimum wage. He stands for unionization. He stands for ending the stupid wars. He stands for fighting climate change and doing a new deal to rebuild our infrastructure. He stands for everything that Democrats are supposed to stand for. But since they're so corrupted by corporate cash, she can't even bring herself to claim the most popular politician in America as the leader of the Democrats. I would have snap answered that question and said, Bernie Sanders. Yeah, I know he's technically an independent, but he ran as a Democrat. He caucuses with the Democrats, and his philosophy is our philosophy. Bernie Sanders is us. That's my answer. And by the way, you want to win elections? That's what you fucking say. That's what you say if you want to win. But no, they'd rather drown in their corporate cash and keep losing, then actually be progressive and liberal and win. And this is a great example of it right here. Nancy Pelosi, pathetic. I mean, these. And by the way, when you talk about, like, who is literally the leader of the Democratic Party, Chuck Schumer is the top Democrat in the country. against the Iran deal, you know, was he for the Iraq War? I think he was for the Iraq War. Top Democrat in the country, Chuck Schumer, utter disaster, one of Wall Street's favorite Democrats, and Nancy Pelosi, too, one of the top Democrats in the country. No, you have to snap answer that question with Bernie Sanders, or you're preparing yourself for more losses. I gotta double check the. I think that's true. Chuck Schumer, Iraq War. Let me see. Fact checking on air. Yep. He voted for the Iraq War. Well, fuck me with a broomstick. All right. Don't actually do that. That'd be horrible. All right, now we move on to Chelsea Clinton. Oh, good, good. I'm just beating up on the corporate Democrats right now. I'm just beating up on them. So guess what? Chelsea Clinton is getting a Lifetime Achievement Award. Chelsea Clinton is getting a Lifetime Achievement Award. This is not The Onion. Variety Magazine is giving it to her. By the way, she's 37 years old. Here's my rule that I just made up, but it's a rule. It's a solid rule. The only person who's allowed to get a Lifetime Achievement Award at the age of 37 is Malala Yousafzai. Everybody else can blow a goat. So 37 years old, Chelsea Clinton is getting a Lifetime Achievement Award. It will be given out at a luncheon at the Ritzy Cipriani restaurant in Midtown Manhattan on April 18th. Peasants not allowed in the door. Okay, when I read this article, this is in The Hill, by the way, but when I read this, I think, oh, they're trying to give Trump another 4 years in 2020. Like, that's, they're trying to lose again. They're trying to lose in 2018. They're trying to lose in 2020. They're just trying to lose. Like, this is the most fucking self-aggrandizing, narcissistic. You know what I think of when I read this? You ever see that episode of South Park where they go, I don't know if they're in, like, San Francisco or something, and they do, like, this playoff smog, and they call it smug. There's a lot of smug in the air here in San Francisco because they're around all these, like you know, big-time liberals, and they literally, like, fart into a glass and smell their own farts. Like, oh, please, I think that when I saw that play, I didn't think it was as good as the reviews said, and I think that it would have been much better if you did Daniel Day-Lewis was part of... Oh, yeah. Like, that's what this feels like. This is a bunch of rich liberals sitting around smelling each other's farts going, oh, isn't that lovely? Oh, it smells so good. So sad. Okay, other winners this year include Gayle King of CBS This Morning, actress Jessica Chastain, Blake Lively, and Audra McDonald, and the media executive Shari Redstone. They say Clinton is being honored, quote, for her work with the Alliance for a Healthier Generation, which empowers kids to develop lifelong healthy habits. By the way, just to give you her overall resume here, Chelsea Clinton worked for NBC, McKinsey & Company, Avenue Capital Group, New York University. Well, she serves on the New York University board, I think. Or she worked in New York University, but she serves on several other boards, including School of American Ballet, Clinton Global Initiative, Clinton Foundation, Weill Cornell Medical Group, Common Sense Media, and IAC Interactive Corp. Yeah, by the way, nepotism like a mofo. Okay, it's not PC to say. You got to be kind, because whatever. She couldn't help it that she's the daughter of the Clintons. No, but they leveraged that. When she got paid by NBC, she barely did dick. She did, like, nothing and got paid hundreds of thousands of dollars. So, yeah, nepotism. They're buying access to the parents through the kid by giving the kid a job. And now this person born with a silver spoon in their mouth, they're giving a lifetime achievement award, just compounding it. Look, let me be clear, too. Trump was born with a silver spoon in his mouth also. He says, I started with a small loan of $1 million. Small loan of $1 million. We would all be so lucky to have such a small loan. But that's not even true. When his dad died, his dad was worth $400 million. When his dad died, he got a lot of money, way more than, you know, $1 million. He got tens of millions, if not over $100 million. So he's just lying when he says that. So Trump is born with a silver spoon in his mouth, and I got no love for Trump. But all I'm saying is, why would you embrace the same kind of nepotistic, if that's a word, nepotism-laden approach? And why would you – and they're propping her up for a run, by the way. And, oh, my God, if she runs, she would run in my district. Oh, Nita Lowey is my congresswoman here. And they mentioned in the article, like, she's – because she's been, like, firing back on Twitter with witty, pithy things that, you know, a fucking team of staffers came up with. Like, Steve King is a racist and a misogynist. Oh, is that good? Let's tweet that out. Oh, look. Oh, well, there. And they write articles about it. The fucking establishment media is like, oh, Hillary Clinton said something. Or Chelsea Clinton said something on Twitter. So if she runs, she'd run in my district. And so she's prepping for a congressional run or maybe a Senate run. They say if Kirsten Gillibrand runs for president, she's a senator from New York, she might just go right for Senate or whatever. But, like, this fucking nepotism and, like, born with you're in a dynasty family, it's like a pedigree. Fuck off. I'm sick of it. No more Bushes, no more Clintons. Sorry, not interested. I'm obviously no more Trumps. Oh, I don't even need to say that one. That one's so crystal clear. But we gotta fucking, it's gotta be about the issues. It's gotta be about the facts. It's gotta be about policy substance and ways to improve people's lives, as opposed to, like, grooming this robotic candidate to keep serving the establishment by giving her fucking lifetime achievement awards when she didn't earn it. Ugh, it's so sick, man. Ugh. Lifetime achievement award for Chelsea Clinton. That's unreal. I'm 29. She's 37. That's like in 8 years, I've lived enough to earn a lifetime. Only Malala Yousafzai has earned a lifetime achievement award in 37 years. How can you get a lifetime achievement award when you haven't lived a lifetime? Fuck it all. Okay. Next. Sad story. Let's sober up here. Somber up. Four people were killed in a terror attack in London yesterday. Somebody mowed down people on Westminster Bridge with a car and then got out with a knife near Parliament. One of the dead is a police officer. This is the worst attack in London in 10 years. It was the anniversary of the Brussels attack. So that was a good hint as to who's responsible for it. In fact, ISIS has come out and taken responsibility. Now, they say there's no evidence of the guy actually communicating with ISIS and, like, taking orders from ISIS. But it's a standard thing where you have somebody who's got a jihadist mentality, and they'll commit an attack, and then ISIS will say, yes, we claim him for our own, in the sense that there's a shared ideology. So not like he was actually operating with the group or whatever, but there's just a shared ideology. The virus of the mind that is jihadism infected this guy, and that obviously affects ISIS as well, so they just say, yeah, we claim him. And look, to me, that's enough of a connection to say there's a connection. You know, it's like if Dylann Roof does a terror attack, and then a few years later you have another white supremacist terrorist who does it, and whatever, the KKK or neo-Nazis say, yeah, we claim it. I'm not going to say no, because there wasn't an operational connection. It's the same ideology and virus of the mind, so you can say that it's a connection enough to be a connection. You should make the distinction and say he wasn't working with the group, but there's still the ideological connection, which is a pretty strong connection and shows that you're dealing with a broader problem. So Huffington Post explains here, the slain officer was identified as 48-year-old Keith Palmer. Aisha Freid, a 43-year-old teacher and mother of two, was identified as one of the two bystanders killed in the rampage. The remaining victim has not been identified, but police said he was a man in his 50s. Now, actually, I read this article a few hours ago. Since then, I saw on Twitter, there's actually a guy from Utah, so an American, who was killed in this. That may be the guy they're referring to who was in his 50s. The terrorist hasn't been named yet, but authorities say he was investigated for Islamist extremist views a few years back. And they say that he was motivated by anger over foreign policy. That's what they say in the article here. But of course, I mean, look, you gotta add the other aspect too, which is he was also brainwashed by jihadism. And he bought into the framework of fundamentalist Salafist Islam, Wahhabi Islam, which says, you know, you're all the infidel, you're all evil if you're not exactly like me and don't believe in the exact school of thought within Islam that I have, this ultra-conservative fundamentalist interpretation that says basically everybody's evil unless they're with us. And under that interpretation, the men are allowed to take sex slaves, you know, female sex slaves, and they're allowed to subjugate people who don't believe in what they believe, and they're allowed to kill them, and you know the deal. So, as usual is the case, you'll have the people get into their separate camps, and some people will say, it's all about foreign policy, and it's all the West's fault for breaking the Middle East and invading Iraq and killing so many civilians, and this is the backlash to that. There's certainly a grain of truth in that, but it's not the whole truth, you know, so that's certainly a part of it, and if you listen to almost any of these attackers, most of them say, they give you geopolitical reasons, and they say, this is why I'm doing this, and it's anger over these real terrestrial grievances, yada, yada. That's partly true, but it's also, the opposite is always true, which is sometimes it's just ideological, and you don't even need the real-world grievance to justify just killing the infidel. So, as usual, you'll have the two camps here. One says, it's all foreign policy. The other says, it's all Islam. No, it's a mix. The answer's a mix. It can both be a fundamentalist Salafist interpretation of Islam, literalist Islam, and it can also be you know, a backlash for horrific foreign policy from the West that killed so many civilians and further radicalized populations, so on and so forth. So this is all the information we have at this point. It's a terrible, terrible tragedy. Obviously, you know, we stand with Britain in their moment of mourning here, and we hope to avoid stuff like this in the future. Okay. All right, next. Disaster in Syria time. Okay. We have a disaster in Syria that just happened this week. Reuters reports at least 33 people were killed in an airstrike that hit a school sheltering displaced people near the Islamic State-held city of Raqqa, a group that monitors the war in Syria, said on Wednesday. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said it believed the strike was carried out by the U.S.-led coalition against the Islamic State. Observatory activists had counted at least 33 bodies at the site near the village of Al-Mansura, west of Raqqa. Observatory Director Rami Abdulrahman told Reuters the airstrike took place on Monday night. He said the U.S.-led coalition had escalated its aerial campaign against the militant group around Raqqa this month, causing numerous civilian casualties, Abdulrahman said. The nearest Islamic State installation to the site of the airstrike was a religious school about 1.9 miles away. Okay, so this is far too common in Syria and elsewhere in the Middle East, but in Syria specifically, so there's been countless stories of Russia, for example, bombing civilian centers. That's happened. There's been countless stories of the U.S. bombing civilian centers. So, you know, perhaps the best way to approach it is for Russia to get the fuck out and the U.S. to get the fuck out, because I don't know why we're there in the first place. I don't know why we're there. There's no direct threat against the U.S. coming out of Syria. And furthermore, we admit it is openly our policy that we don't like either side in this civil war. So the U.S. says we don't like Assad, we don't like the Syrian government, because they have alliances with Hezbollah, for example, and they have an alliance with Iran, who we don't like, and they have an alliance with Russia. And so for geopolitical reasons, among other reasons, they say, and Assad's a terrible dictator, so, you know, we don't like the Syrian government side of the war. But then also they admit at times, hey, we don't like the rebels either, because the rebels are over 60% Islamist extremists and jihadists. So you have, you know, al-Nusra, who changed their name because they were officially connected to al-Qaeda and they wanted Western support. So they said, no, we're not with al-Qaeda anymore. Now we changed our name. Are you buying this? So you have ISIS in there. You have al-Qaeda in there. You have other various factions of jihadist groups. So if official U.S. policy is we don't like the Syrian government and we don't like the rebels, then why the fuck are you involved? Why are you involved? What are you going to do? What are you going to go bomb both sides? Is that what you want to do? Maybe then maybe further escalate to a bigger conflict with Russia as a result of that? Why would you be there? Why would you be there? Well, ISIS is really bad. Okay, well, it's not like there aren't people there fighting ISIS already. It's not like there aren't Shia militias fighting ISIS and moderate Sunnis fighting ISIS and the Kurds fighting ISIS. There are people fighting ISIS. So why would we waste our money and our weaponry and put our people on the line when... admittedly, we don't like both sides. I mean, think about how crazy that is. You see a fight going on, you don't like either side, and you're like, I will now get involved and start punching people. Why? And then as a result of that, this happens from time to time. Whoops, we killed 33 civilians. Freedom and democracy. Why doesn't everybody love America? Why don't you love America? I don't understand. Why are you so mad at us? It's not like we just killed 33 people. And they always say this too. This happened in Afghanistan, where they killed, I think, over 30 people in the bombing of the Kunduz hospital. They said, no, we needed to attack because we heard the Taliban was there. Well, it turns out the Taliban wasn't there, and you just massacred civilians. So think about it. The argument they make is, we need to stay in Afghanistan to protect the civilian population from the Taliban. But you just massacred the civilian population in a bombing. So their argument is, I mean, we have to stay there to, like, protect the hospitals from being slaughtered by these savages. I mean, obviously, we're the only ones who should do the hospital slaughtering. again, look, whenever you leave Afghanistan, the Taliban's going to be resurgent. So it's a matter of if you rip off the Band-Aid now or if you rip it off in 80 years. But they're going to be resurgent. There's nothing you can do about that to fight that. So you got to get out sometime, unless you want to just keep blowing money and resources there while our infrastructure gets a grade of D-plus at home and we got people in poverty and homeless over here. So you pull out now, you know. Syria, same thing. You don't like both sides. Why are you there? Well, apparently you're there to fucking kill civilians, which, again, is going to lead to more hatred and backlash against the United States. It's just not – don't do it, man. Don't do it. Just get out. It's unnecessary. This is the military-industrial complex that's taken over our government, and they keep escalating everywhere. And they don't care about the consequences because it's more about the bottom line. Okay. All right, next. Lindsey Graham questioned Neil Gorsuch during his Supreme Court nomination, and they had an interesting back and forth that I want to share with you here.
And just like Ben's family, my family.
Oops, wrong one. Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham cracker.
About what's going on in the country with President Trump. Whether you like him or you don't, he is president. But you have said several times that he is not above the law as president. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
You told Senator Leahy if there was a law passed that a Muslim could not serve in the military, you believe, based on current law, that would be an illegal act?
Senator, yes, I see that having all sorts of constitutional problems under current law.
So if we have laws on the book that prevent waterboarding, do you agree with me that the Detainee Treatment Act prevents waterboarding?
Yes, Senator, that's my recollection of it.
So in case President Trump is watching, which he may very well be, one, you did a good job picking Judge Gorsuch. Number two, here's the bad part. If you start waterboarding people, you may get impeached. Is that a fair summary?
Senator, the impeachment power belongs to this body.
Okay, that's even better. Would he be subject to prosecution?
Senator, I'm not going to speculate.
But he's not above the law.
No man is above the law.
Okay.
No man.
Thank you.
The end was amazing. So, in other words, he's saying, if Trump tortures, would he be subject to prosecution? I'm not going to speculate. But no man is above the law. That's right. No man is above the law. Well, then answer that question. If Trump does torture, should he be prosecuted? The answer is yes. If no man is above the law, then when he asks, hey, if Trump does waterboarding, is he subject to prosecution? Your answer shouldn't be, I'm not going to speculate. Your answer should be, yeah, yeah, that's against the law. Yeah, I just told you, no man's above the law, so yes is the answer to that question. And then also, I mean, let's really soak in all the different levels of hypocrisy and absurdity here. No man is above the law, Gorsuch said. Gorsuch donated to George W. Bush for his 2004 presidential campaign. No man's above the law except George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice and Obama and Trump. They're all already above the law. Now, why do I say that? Well, Bush waged an illegal war against a country that didn't attack us, didn't have the UN said the war is illegal. Then we occupied them for over a decade. He set up a worldwide torture regime, shredded the Constitution, no more habeas corpus, no more due process, no more protection from unreasonable search and seizure. In virtually every way, he's above the law. He violated, like, every amendment in the Bill of Rights. No man's above the law, except Bush and Cheney, who can do illegal wars and occupy the countries and do torture and extrajudicial prisons and not give people a trial. And apparently some people are above the law. Now, Obama, why do I say he's above the law? Well, Obama assassinated U.S. citizens in drone strikes. I've never seen a clearer example of something that's unconstitutional and illegal. They say, well, look, Anwar al-Awlaki was a jihadist, so we had it coming. But under our system of government, if you're an American system, you get a trial. That's the way it works. It's not like, whoops, it's inconvenient now, so now let's ignore it. No, you could have even tried him in absentia. He didn't even need to be there. You could have tried him and found him guilty. But they didn't do that. He assassinated a U.S. citizen with a drone, and now no man is above the law, except everybody who's been. Every president post-World War II has acted above the law. Are you kidding me with the fucking how many foreign governments, democratically elected governments in South America did we topple and put in puppet leaders? That's obviously above the law. We fucking Iran, we toppled their democratic leader and put in the Shah just so we could jack their oil and Britain could jack their oil. Come on, man. What's the fucking this self-aggrandizing bullshit? Like, no man is above the law. You keep saying that, but then we act as if men are above the law. You know, Trump, why is Trump above the law? Well, Trump's above the law. And by the way, actually, real quick, just to go back to Obama, I didn't finish my thought on that. So, and it's not just Anwar al-Awlaki. He killed his son, Abdul Rahman, who was not an extremist, with a drone. I mean, everybody shrugged. Whatever. Obama tacked on different companies, different countries, excuse me, to the declaration of war that Bush did for the war on terror. So, like, when he started doing drone strikes in Somalia and Yemen and Pakistan, he didn't have a declaration of war to go into those countries, so that's unconstitutional. But he said, no, 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 it's cool, we're going to lump it into the bin of the war on terror declaration of war. Well, you can't do that. That's wildly unconstitutional. You need Congress to approve each one of those countries you invade. He didn't care. And the Republicans said, I don't know, we kind of agree with them on that, and we want to bomb anywhere and everywhere when we're president, when we have our administration in there. So, yeah, fuck it. We're not gonna actually hold him accountable and treat him like he like it, the law is actually applied equally. He can do whatever he wants. Oh, God. And President Trump, of course, in his first military raid, massacred 30 civilians. 30 civilians, including an 8-year-old girl. Nobody's above the law. Well, except presidents get to, with impunity, massacre civilians, invade all these different countries. Trump increased drone strikes 432% over Obama, and Obama had increased them big time over Bush. So, please, they're above the law. And finally, I just want to point out this hilarious little piece of hypocrisy here. Lindsey Graham, who now suddenly is concerned about, oh, torture. No, we don't want waterboarding. We don't want torture. Apparently, John McCain rubbed off on him. And when I say rubbed off on him, pun intended, he probably rubbed off on him in multiple ways. But John McCain has been anti-torture because he was tortured. So he's like, oh, it's horrible. Don't wish that upon anybody, even your worst enemy, and it doesn't work, and yada, yada, yada. So apparently McCain rubbed off on him because Lindsey Graham, first of all, Lindsey Graham never met a war he doesn't like. So he's concerned about, you know, hey, does the law apply equally? It better apply equally, except if I want to keep our military in a country illegally, like Iraq, forever, which he does. He says, you don't leave. That's what he said. He was asked by a reporter, so when do you get out? He goes, you don't get out. You don't leave. So he can illegally occupy a country forever. That's his preferred policy, but no man is above the law. But Lindsey, that's against the law. That doesn't count. What the fuck? And he also was the biggest cheerleader. He just did it recently with an attack recently, a terror attack. He was like, hold him as an enemy combatant. Don't read him his Miranda rights. No due process. No habeas corpus. But he was an American citizen. What do you mean? Just declare him an enemy combatant. That's unconstitutional. That's illegal, Lindsey. As you advocate for things that are against the law, you're like, no man's above the law, right, Judge Neil Gorsuch? Fucking clowns, man. I mean, these guys, they never apply the same standards to themselves, you know? And it's the grossest thing because it's just such deep hypocrisy and such absurdity, self-aggrandizing bullshit, as if America hasn't been treating, you know, our leaders like they're above the law for decades. Okay. Doot, doot, doo. I'm getting the growling stomach going on. That's no fun. All right, next. Let's go to Jeff Flake from Arizona. Oops.
And
premature clickeration. Jeff Flake, a Republican senator from Arizona, decided to joke around at the confirmation hearing for Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch. Let's watch.
And just like Ben's family, my family's been texting me throughout this process, asking me to ask questions that they would ask. I ask a few of them, you know, for suggestions, and my son Dallin, teenager, said, ask him if he would rather fight 100 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck. I'd never heard it either. Apparently it was a question on Reddit a while ago, but anyway, that's where it's going from here, I think.
You can tell him I'm very rarely at a loss for words.
Okay, all right.
But you got me.
I will tell him a teenager stumped you there. My brother Scott asked if you've ever worn gym shorts and a tank top under your robe.
Senator, on that one, we have what's called the Fifth Amendment, which is part of the Bill of Rights as well, and which, of course, protects the right not to self-incriminate. So I might have to exercise my rights under the Fifth Amendment to that one.
That is a good answer.
It gets under my skin. I know I'm being an asshole here, but, like, these establishment pricks. Neil Gorsuch's voting record is abysmal. I call him Baby Scalia, because that's what he is. He tells a story about when Justice Scalia died, I was skiing. I couldn't see down the mountain because from the tears in my eyes. Oh, Holy Scalia, we love you so dearly. Meanwhile, Justice Scalia, ardent defender of torture. The guy thinks the devil is literally real. The guy argued that black people belong in, quote, slower track schools. The guy was as far right of a justice as you could possibly have. I mean, he was abysmal. And Gorsuch, it's his idol. You know, he loved that guy. Gorsuch is, for money in politics, for the ultimate corruption of our system. So as they're over there joking, you said a horse-sized duck. Having our democracy become an oligarchy is so funny. It's so funny. Theocracy is hilarious. He voted in the Hobby Lobby case. He voted to allow religious business owners to take away the pill, birth control, from health plans that are provided to their employees. Think about the precedent that sets. So if you have a religious employer who says, I'm against vaccines, well, they could just say, well, I don't want the health insurance that I provide to have vaccines as part of it because I'm against it. I don't give a fuck what you're against. You're the employer. They are the employee. They can decide what goes in their own health plan. Well, they go, no, but we provide it. So the fuck what? That's like if they give you money, let's just say they pay in money, should they have a right to tell you after they give you your check from that week in cash, they give you $500 in the week. They go, okay, now I don't want you to spend any of that money on this, this, and this. You'd be like, this is my money, bitch. What are you talking about? I get to do what I want with this shit. That's effectively what it is. No, if I'm a religious employer, I get to choose what is and isn't in your health plan. Neil Gorsuch said, yeah, the religious employer can do that. He loves theocracy. He wants fucking religion to take over government. He loves money and politics. You know, he wrote a book saying euthanasia, physician-assisted suicide, is evil and we should never allow it. So you're going to have somebody who claims, oh, I'm a small government conservative, I believe in freedom. But he says, the most private decision ever, hey, I have a terminal illness and I want to die in peace with my family by my side. So let's have a process set up where somebody could do that. He wrote a whole book saying, no, you don't get to decide when to end your life in a peaceful way. Nobody gets to decide that. Well, then don't say you're a small government conservative. Don't say you believe in freedom. Don't say you believe in liberty, because you want to take away the liberty for the most private personal decision ever. You want to tell somebody with stage 4 cancer who's in excruciating pain that you know better? That's what he wrote a book on that, against the freedom to do that. Horse-sized duck. How about dick-sized Supreme Court nominee? That's what I see. Next, we move on to Sarah Palin, mofo yo. Here we go. So a few nights ago on Twitter, I noticed Sarah Palin tweeted something that said, "No wonder he can't get a job," and it had a link. And I wanted to see what she was talking about. I was curious. I was like, what the fuck does that even mean? So I clicked on it. It sent me to her website where she proceeded to go after the NFL player Colin Kaepernick, but the reason why she went after him is mental. So Mediaite explains here, Sarah Palin sparked outrage by criticizing an NFL player for donating $50,000 to Meals on Wheels, a program benefiting seniors and the disabled, which is facing possible funding cuts under Trump's new budget. The title of her blog post on the topic is, "Seriously, Colin Kaepernick just pulled another political stunt." Another political stunt by donating money for meals for people. Obviously, her use of "another" refers to Kaepernick's decision not to stand for the national anthem in protest of police brutality. In a tweet linking to the post, she mused, "No wonder he can't get a job," in reference to reports that some NFL teams don't want to hire him. The post itself outlines her oppositional argument, which is that it has yet to be confirmed that Meals on Wheels will lose funding. It's unbelievable. I mean, you want to talk about a partisan hack? So look, here's the situation with the Meals on Wheels cuts. Her point is, he's not cutting it. He's not cutting it. So let's just say that's true for a second, that, okay, Trump isn't cutting Meals on Wheels. That's still not a reason to go after Colin Kaepernick for donating $50,000 to Meals on Wheels, you jackass. That's a good idea, and that's a kind gesture, no matter what. It is always a kind gesture. It is always a good thing. It is never something that is bad. She's making fun of a guy for donating $50,000 to feed people? I can't. And remember, they always argue, the Republicans do, "Oh, government shouldn't be involved in charity and the like. Leave it up to the people." So Colin Kaepernick steps up and goes, "Okay, I'll do that. I'm an individual. I'm a private citizen, and I'm going to donate my own money out of my own volition to these people." And she's like, "Ah, gross. That's what you say you love. Oh, my God. Oh, my God." Now, furthermore, what is the situation with Meals on Wheels and the cuts? So first of all, Meals on Wheels gets like a small percentage of their funding in a block grant given from the federal government to the states. But the program that's being cut is not technically Meals on Wheels. It is the umbrella program, which includes Meals on Wheels as like a subgroup within it of the things that this broader government organization funds. So they, on like a little technicality, they think they got it. Like, aha, we got you, stupid liberals. It's not that Meals on Wheels is being directly cut. It's that its parent organization, where the federal government gives a certain percentage of the funding to it, that's getting cut. So, ha, gotcha. No, you didn't get anybody. So nobody ever claimed the entire program was being abolished. Nobody said that. A small percentage of its funding is getting cut. And yes, that will affect people in a negative way. Some people will not be able to get their meals. But, yeah, the parent government organization is getting cut, not directly Meals on Wheels. You didn't get anybody. They're unbelievable. They look for any little fucking thing and go, "Aha! Now donating money to Meals on Wheels is stupid. Ha! No wonder he can't find a job. He likes to feed old people and poor people. Ha! What a dick." And then also, Colin Kaepernick, this was another story in the news recently, I think he donated like $1 million or something to feed people in Somalia. Like some shit like that. How can anybody come out against us like that? And by the way, man, does the whole situation with Colin Kaepernick really prove a point that the left has been making for a while, which is it's never good enough. for the protest police on the right. So what happens when there's violence being done? Well, the right says, how dare these left-wing protesters do violence? That's fucked up. By the way, they're right on that one. Don't do violence, okay? But then when it's no longer violence, let's say it just becomes like, you know, property damage, which is still violence, but it's a step below actual physical violence against people. So let's say it's property damage. They go, stupid liberals rioting and doing property damage. Why can't you just do it the right way and protest the right way and be peaceful? So, look, on that one, I also think they're right. I'm not in favor of property damage. Don't fucking hurt somebody's small business who had nothing to do with whatever we're protesting over here. So, but they say that's not good enough either. So don't do violence, don't do property damage. But then when somebody does a peaceful protest, which is fucking exactly what Colin Kaepernick did, even though that's exactly what the Republicans say is the right way to protest, they go, how dare he? How dare he? How dare he? So then there's just keep it real. He can't do anything that you would approve of. Just keep it real. Because what's the epitome of a peaceful protest? A guy sees countless situations around the country, back to back, unarmed black people getting killed. So we have a police brutality issue in the country. He wants to address that. So he decides to sit up, take a knee for the national anthem. That is a peaceful protest through and through. He ain't rioting, he ain't doing property damage, he ain't calling for violence, nothing, peaceful protest. And the protest police on the right move the goalposts every time. Oh, you're doing violence, don't do violence. Oh, you're doing property damage, don't do property damage. Oh, you're protesting peacefully, don't protest peacefully. So in other words, sit down and shut the fuck up and take it and accept it. And even when he says, look, I'm not just going to be all talk here. You think, oh, I only care and I'm only doing empty gestures. I'm going to donate hundreds of thousands of dollars to this charitable cause. I'm going to give $50,000 to Meals on Wheels to feed people, poor people, elderly people. And Sarah Palin comes out against giving money to Meals on Wheels because Colin Kaepernick is for it. Unbelievable. You want to talk about rank partisan hypocrisy and reactionary, idiotic bullshit. Sarah Palin is your girl. Okay. Now we go to Tulsi Gabbard. Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard proposed a bill to decriminalize marijuana. So let's see what she had to say on the floor of the House.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm rising today to urge my colleagues to support H.R. 1227, the Ending Federal Marijuana Prohibition Act, which I've introduced with my Republican colleague, a fellow Army veteran and former prosecutor from the state of Virginia, Congressman Tom Garrett, where we are seeking to address our outdated and widely problematic marijuana laws by federally decriminalizing marijuana. FBI reports have shown that in 2011 alone, an individual in the United States was arrested for marijuana use, sale, or possession every 42 seconds. Every 42 seconds, mostly in poor and minority communities. Our current laws are turning everyday Americans into criminals, sending them to jail, ruining their lives, tearing apart families, and wasting huge amounts of taxpayer dollars to arrest, prosecute, and incarcerate people for marijuana use, a drug that has been proven time and time again to be far less dangerous than alcohol, both for individual consumers as well as for the people around them. Dr. Donald Abrams, who's the chief of oncology at San Francisco General Hospital, has talked about how in the 37 years that he has worked and served as a physician, the number of patients that he's admitted to his hospital with marijuana complications are zero. Number of patients that he's admitted due to alcohol use is, quote, profound. So rather than actually helping people, our current laws are turning them into criminals, forever impacting their future and the future of their families. Over the years, we've spent hundreds of billions of dollars locking people up for nonviolent marijuana offenses, creating strain within our criminal justice system, clogging court calendars, and resulting in further overcrowding our prisons.
Okay, so that was awesome, and I give Tulsi Gabbard a lot of credit for doing this, and she made logical, factual, rational arguments there that I don't know who can disagree with. So I don't want to get into the obvious angle of this, which is, okay, should marijuana be decriminalized? Yes. I go further. It should be legalized. And by the way, 60% of the American people believe it should be legal as well. So not just decriminalized. So if anything, she's doing something that's even less controversial than saying legalize it. But 60% of the American people are, you know, on this page. So I don't need to get into the obvious, okay, there are economic benefits, billions of dollars in tax revenue that can go towards a million different things, schooling, education, fucking, you know, education on the drugs, research, infrastructure, whatever. So there's economic benefits, there's a liberty and freedom benefit to doing it, there's you'll decrease crime because prohibition increases crime. It doesn't decrease crime. If you legalize, tax, and regulate, you'll cut, you know, the crime rate down. We know because of alcohol, there was alcohol prohibition, crime was up. You legalize alcohol, crime goes down. So, but I don't even want to get into all of that because all that stuff we've spoken about a million times. What I want to talk about is the silence from other Democrats on this issue is just a perfect example as to why corporate Democrats, establishment Democrats, are useless. They're useless Wall Street pawns. Because, so they're so, how do we win? How do we beat Trump? How do we go fight back against these Republicans? And first of all, too many of them vote with Trump to approve his picks, as we saw with Joe Manchin and the like during that whole process. But whenever they come up with an argument to oppose Trump, it's like, Russia! Russia! Yeah, Russia's bad, and Russia something, fucking something, I don't know. Russia. Trump's Putin's puppet or something. So they come up with these fucking hysterical arguments that are just fear-mongering and McCarthyism, and they think if they scream Russia enough that somehow, you know, a single mother in North Dakota who's having trouble paying the bills is going to go, well, I'm going to vote for the Democrats now. I mean, they screamed Russia, and man, do I fear Vladimir Putin. No, you have to actually talk about real issues. So the corporate Democrats knew what they were doing, and if they weren't corporate Democrats, if they were justice Democrats, what do you do when Tulsi Gabbard proposes a bill to decriminalize marijuana? Why are you not making this a big thing? Why are, you know, all the Democrats not getting their talking points down, flooding the Sunday shows, and talking about how this is the direction the country needs to go in? President Trump says he cares about creating jobs and making the economy great again. Well, you know how you create tens of thousands of jobs overnight? You legalize, tax, and regulate marijuana. Now, I know she proposed decriminalization, so it's a little bit different. But there are tax benefits. There are all these benefits to it. And 60% of Americans already agree with you. Why are you hesitant to talk about these issues and hammer them home? Why are you not putting the pressure on the Republicans and on Trump and saying, here's what we're for, here's what we're fighting for, the majority agree with us, come out and say no. Now come out and say, make them say no, put them in a corner. Go ahead, say no to 60% of the American people. Say no to all those people who have a brother-in-law or a friend in jail for 15 years over some bullshit nonviolent drug offense. Go ahead and do it. We dare you. We fucking dare you to do it. But they don't know how to do it because the corporate Democrats don't care about actual issues that affect people's lives. They care, I don't know, how do I hold on to power while still taking Wall Street money? How do I do that? I guess I'll scream about Russia or something. Motherfucker, you're never going to win that way. So all you have, take an issue like this. Take an issue like decriminalizing marijuana. So many people in the country agree with you, overwhelming majority. Hammer it home. Say the Republicans are against it, which means the Republicans are against you, the American people. This is a democracy. They're supposed to implement what you want. Call your congressman, your Republican congressman, ask them why they're against this. Get all the Democrats on the same page. Hammer that home. If they were to do that with this issue, if they were to do that with the minimum wage, if they were to do that with background checks, universal background checks for gun purchases, you can coast to an election victory on that alone in 2018. That's it. Just, hey, 80% of the American people want to raise the minimum wage. The Republicans are against it. If all the Democrats in the House and the Senate, in a unified way, flooded all the political talk shows, all gave speeches in the House and in the Senate about here's why we need to raise the minimum wage. These corporations are screwing over the American people. There are millions upon millions of working poor people in America who work full time, but they don't make enough money to survive. If you raise the minimum wage, guess what? That cuts government programs. You save tax money because right now they rely on the safety net. People who make the minimum wage for a living rely on the safety net to make ends meet. So taxpayers would be off the hook if you make the corporations pay them a living wage. How can you lose with 80% of people with you? You lose with on single payer. Over 55% of the American people are with you. You still lose on that. You don't even make an argument for it. Over 90% of people are with you on universal background checks. Why are you not pushing that and all getting on the same page and making the Republicans say, we're against it? We're against it. We're against a universal background check system. And yes, we know that more fucking crazy people are going to get guns and kill people if we don't have a universal background check system. So yeah, we're on the record. That's what we're for. The Republicans recently loosened gun laws, an Obama-era rule which said in Social Security, if you're too far gone mentally to control your own money, well, then you shouldn't have a gun in that circumstance. If you're too far gone mentally to control money, why should we trust you with a gun? The Republicans rolled that back. They rolled that back, and the Democrats, nobody said anything. Nobody said anything. They're giving you a fucking gift on a silver platter. Here, beat me over the head with a fucking sledgehammer. Leave me in a bloody pulp in the ground for the next election. And the Democrats, Russia. They're such a joke. Tulsi Gabbard's 100% correct here. Other Democrats, where the fuck are you? Ro Khanna did a great job the other week. We discussed that. Representative from California, he said, hey, here's Donald Trump's old quote on single payer. He was in favor of a Canadian system. He praised it. So now we're calling on Donald Trump to work with Bernie Sanders and stay true to his word and implement something like that here in America. We want a Medicare for all single payer system here in America. Ro Khanna said it. Were there any fucking Democrats other than him who went out there and said, yeah, I agree with that. Let's all fucking hammer that home and flood the airwaves and give speeches. Nope, none of them. Only Ro Khanna. Nobody else said anything. And they wonder why they lose. They wonder why they can't beat a reality star buffoon with a meerkat on his head and a Cheeto face who said, I grab him by the pussy, I don't even wait, and said, we have to take out their families, talking about murdering civilians during the election. You couldn't beat that guy? You couldn't beat him because you don't care about the issues and you don't fight for the issues and you don't push for the issues. You need to follow in the footsteps of Bernie Sanders, follow in the footsteps of Tulsi Gabbard, follow in the footsteps of Ro Khanna. And then maybe, just maybe, you'll actually start winning. But that means you got to stop taking the corporate money, stop taking it, and actually give a shit about the issues. Okay. All right, let me do one more real quick. I know I'm out of time, but I got to do it. Sheriff David Clark is a black Republican, and he's a darling on Fox News. So they always bring him in to attack liberals and call them stupid. And, you know, it's the classic song and dance that they do over there on Fox News. Bring on a gay person to attack gay people. Bring on a black person to attack black people. Bring on anybody to shit on liberals. That's just how it works. Well, now this guy is in deep trouble because he runs a jail in Milwaukee. And listen to what happened there. In July 2016, a newborn baby died at the Milwaukee County Jail after the mother was forced to give birth on her cell floor. Now, 3 months after Milwaukee Sheriff David Clark's office was sued over the baby's death, the controversial law enforcement leader is being sued for additional jail abuse of pregnant women. According to a federal lawsuit filed on March 14th, plaintiff Melissa Hall was shackled before, during, and after childbirth at a local hospital in 2013, a belly chain was allegedly wrapped around her waist when she needed to use the restroom, and she had her wrist attached to the waist and her legs attached to one another by leg irons. Hall claims the jail deputies also denied medical providers' requests to take the chains off during her childbirth, which made it difficult for those providers to give her an epidural. So, okay, think about how much of a savage and a barbarian Sheriff David Clark is. A baby died because the mother was forced to give birth on her cell floor. Sued over that. Sued over keeping women chained up while they're giving birth. And also, on top of all of that, as we covered recently, there multiple people have died in his jails, in his jail under suspicious circumstances. The one that stuck out most in my mind, guys, somebody died of thirst in his jail. Thirst. So that means this guy, nobody was attending to him and they just left him alone and he died. Or he asked them for water at some point and they were like, no, no, you're not going to get it. Okay, either way, this is fucking 2017 United States of America. This guy, Sheriff David Clark, you belong in a jail cell. You belong in a prison cell. Okay, bring this guy up on charges. Get all your evidence there, all your ducks in a row, because this is as guilty can be. You have, by the way, it's not just, you can't even say the word just in the context of talking about this stuff. But it's not a newborn baby who died and a guy who died of thirst. There's been like 5 or 6 different examples of people dying in his jails. He doesn't care about well-being. He doesn't care about human rights. He doesn't care about justice. He commits his own injustices, and he acts as a savage and a barbarian on his own right, in his own respect, as he points a finger at everybody else and goes, ah, savages, barbarians, law and order. He has the nerve to say, and he did when he was campaigning for Trump, well, for law and order. I'm for law and order. That's what I'm in favor of. Unless I'm the one who's acting illegally and in favor of disorder, in which case that doesn't count. So when I'm a criminal, it doesn't count. When you're a criminal, it counts, and we should punish you strictly. Fuck off, man. I can't stand this guy. He belongs in jail. And stories like this show exactly why. How do you let somebody die of thirst in your jail? How do you let a newborn baby die when you delivered it in the cell, on the cell floor? He's a bad guy, man. All right, guys. I love you. We're back tomorrow. You know the deal. Mwah. We'll see you there. Everybody enjoy the rest of your day.